Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
Here it is, 3:10, the 10th of January, February, March. Wow.
Yeah, the third month.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how the sun is by you, but down here in Florida, that extra hour, it's like amazing. I mean, it's dark in the morning, but, and I know that it happens every year, and obviously this is happens to everybody, but it stays light so much later now. It's so nice.
Yeah, well, you know, even with the hour, if you subtract it and just stuck with the old system, it would still be darker later.
Right. Well, of course, that's what happens this time of year. But I think
but it's
in the summertime,
dumb. I wrote a whole column bitching and moaning about that. I finally decided this is stupid. There's no point to this.
What was the point?
It doesn't benefit anybody. It causes traffic accidents. Farmers don't care.
How does it cause traffic accidents?
Apparently, some study has shown that daylight saving. So when you do the hour switch, it confuses people. They don't get enough sleep or something, and then they get into and a number of people die.
Oh, that's awful.
More than the norm.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is all about population control. You know?
I never thought of that. Well, not you. Okay, well, then I can just skip it.
Well, it's been kind of slow out there. The news is a little bit it's just nothing else but Apple.
No, you're
Apple,
bored.
Apple.
You couldn't find any good news.
No, I mean, boring. It was yesterday's news. Everything I looked, it was all about Apple. We'll talk about that in a second.
Why?
Well, we'll talk about that, just this whole event they had, which I have a lot to discuss about that event itself. But
did
market,
you actually tune in?
Yeah, I watched it. And honestly, this is the first one that I shut it off early.
Well, I didn't even bother. I mean, they've already announced this watch in September, if
right.
I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So what's the big deal? So they announce it again and get everyone's attention? This is crazy.
Well, we'll talk about it now, I guess. I think the highlight of the entire event was the announcement of the new laptop, the new MacBook. Which,
yeah, that sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, well, it
no,
was. I mean,
seriously, it sounds like a under 2 pound, which is like about as light as you're going to ever get. It might be nice.
I was surprised it didn't have a touchscreen. I was surprised it didn't somehow roll off the top where you can take it as an iPad with you, but that would maybe cannibalize on their other sales. But it was very light, massive batteries packed in there. The actual processing system and the entire logic board is ridiculously small. There's not a lot of memory in there, which I think they're forcing you to use the cloud. I think it was 256 gigabytes, I think.
Yeah, it's not.
You can get one which is larger and faster with 512 and a faster processor. The processor looked good. I mean, everything about it looked good. They spent entirely too much time, I thought, with these little movies about how the aluminum body is made and the, you know, how aluminum is.
This is not a new story.
No.
They built a factory specifically to grind out these bodies, right?
Right.
So what's new about this?
Well, they had molten aluminum pouring into this thing and these other little things being added to it. And they showed you how they made this and how they sanded it so well. So they did the same thing with the watch. You know, they had the movies of steel, the steel alloy and how it was molten and they do this and that to it and then, you know, sand it down and wet sand it and do all this other stuff and put it on top. I thought those little vignettes that they did was an absolute waste of time.
Huh.
Ridiculous waste of time. And I thought that Tim Cook was very much unexcited through the entire watch. It's almost like he was forced up there.
He's not an exciting guy.
No. But he was less excited.
It's starting to show more and more. I mean, when Steve was around, he could feign it a little better. But it seems to me that this is his personality. He's very low-key, dull. He's dull, let's face
yeah,
it.
He was. And like I said, I think the highlight and the stock showed it. Because what I do is I put on my Mac, I have, because you can only watch this live on a Mac or an iPhone
what?
or your iPad.
What?
You can't.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It only streamed onto a Mac?
iOS and Safari on computer terms. In other words, even if you had Safari on your Windows machine, you couldn't play it.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. You can play it on your iOS system, your iPad.
Well,
your...
how do they expect to get any new customers that way? Oh, let me just stream it to our already existing customers who aren't interested in buying a new Mac necessarily, as opposed to streaming it to some Windows users and bringing them over. This is absolutely idiotic.
I don't know. Maybe it's they have such an enormous user base, it doesn't matter.
Buy another one.
So I put on one screen, I put the conference, and on another screen I have the Apple stock on a 5-minute chart just to watch.
Oh, yeah, great idea.
You know, just to watch what's going on, right? So as they're talking and they introduce, which I think was a big surprise, this new laptop. It was a big surprise. They announce this new laptop and how thin it is and the batteries and blah, blah, blah. Stock is going up. It's doing beautifully. Markets are following. And then when they finish that up and they start talking about a couple of other little things, but then they talk about the watch. And that was the point. That was the peak. Stock started moving down, almost went negative. It did go negative, I think, for a second within the discussion. One of the things they talked about, and you didn't see this, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, good for you. Christy Turlington Burns. You know who that is?
Yeah, the old model.
Mm-hmm. She came on stage because she was going to introduce how she uses the iWatch in training for this marathon. And how she
didn't know it was available. How'd she get one?
He was wearing one too. And she got it, and she took it, and she went to Africa with it for some reason. Trained.
Well, she must have got it some time ago.
Why
do they have to wait to June to ship it? I don't get this.
April.
I think that was June.
April 20. April, maybe. So now she there's this whole thing about her and this whatever particular charitable program that she does with helping mothers and all this stuff. And she ran this half marathon and how the Apple Watch helped her in the training. Didn't tell you exactly what it did, just that she was looking at it a lot. And how she's going to use it to help her in training because it was all about the health kit, you know, and this fitness thing.
Hmm.
This research kit was very interesting, although research kit was not necessarily for the watch, but it was for Apple iOS, where doctors for Alzheimer's, they have instead of for Parkinson's, instead of testing your gait and testing your hands and your movement, you can tap on the iPhone with two fingers back and forth and back and forth, and it will start registering something and tell about, you know, how your Parkinson's is it progressing. Or you can speak into the phone and say, ah, for an extended period of time, and it will pick up on the variations in your voice to see about Parkinson's. And all this research is going into some, you know, depository somewhere, and they're finding cures and things like that. But anyway, all I'm telling you is I don't know what the point of this Christy Turlington Burns was, because she was terrible.
Well, he probably – well, there's a lot of interpretations, but I'm sure there's fans involved. When she was younger, she was quite the beauty.
Well, I'm just telling you, it was – I thought it was kind of lame. And there was more of this fluffy, you know, sideshow and slideshow and all this other stuff. And, you know, the watch starts at $350 for the base. And they introduced that.
$349. Let's get that straight.
Up to about 10,000
for the gold. Yeah, oh yeah.
For the gold one. Only a few of those will be made.
Well, you know, I can imagine them people with wearing the $10,000 one getting robbed.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you one thing that was.
I wonder if there's some sort of code you can brick the $10,000 iWatch or Apple Watch. That'd be funny.
Well, I'm also interested in how, if it's being used for Apple Pay and things of that nature.
That seems to not be working well.
How are you supposed to authenticate it? Maybe a thumbprint or something on the screen?
The point of a gun.
Maybe, yeah. The one thing that was a real problem, in my opinion, and it was something I looked for and I was waiting for, and it unfortunately did not happen, was the whole idea of the water resistance. It's only water resistant, not waterproof.
Watch?
Yep. You can't wear it in the shower and things like that. You can get it wet in the rain, things like that.
Most watches are that way.
So
it should be waterproof by your standards?
Oh, yeah.
The thing's already huge.
And the other thing is, there's a big old, this was really, I thought, very telling or shocking. There was a big old button on the side.
Yeah, there's a big button on the side. Let's go back a second to the waterproof thing. You remember that company? I think they're still around. And I think you can still use their services. It's some sort of a suspended polymer or something that's electrically bonds to electronic parts, and you can dip a product into this solution. You know about this?
Yeah, of course.
And then it makes it perfectly waterproof forever. You know about this?
Yes. And they do something in a special machine with some kind of blue lighting or something to seal it?
Yeah, it's got some, it's a very complex process. Mm-hmm. I've never looked into it, so I don't know what it is, but I can imagine that it's something you could do.
Well, if you could
Why don't they just put these watches in there and sell them as waterproof?
I don't know. I think that it's important to have a waterproof watch, but what can I say? And the other thing that was interesting about the conversation, they kept talking about all-day battery. So the
I hate to keep going back to this,
okay.
But I think you're right about the waterproof.
I think
you're going out a lot and it's raining and it's pouring rain and you got this $10,000 watch on, it better be waterproof.
Yeah, you want to go swimming. You want to. Okay, how about this? They're so keyed up about the health. How about the fact you want to swim laps?
Yeah, you want to swim laps.
Yeah. All those people that prefer swimming.
I'm sold on your argument. Now I'm going to use this as the flaw.
It is a major flaw, I think. I really do.
No, I'm all in now.
Yep. Big bust on that, in my opinion. And we'll see what happens, how this plays out. And, you know, if
another company... You're going to say something else and I interrupt you. Now you've lost
I don't remember.
Something by Christy Turlington, I believe.
Yeah, well, she was not good. I don't know what the whole point of that was. The other news about Apple is that Apple is now officially joining the Dow Jones Industrial Average on March 18th.
Has anyone done pre-calculations on what this is going to do to the Dow?
Well, one of the things that's going to happen is that it will be...
This is not... Can I stop you again?
Yeah, sure.
This sure doesn't seem like the time to do this.
Well, what's interesting is if you look at history, oftentimes companies that enter into the Dow reach their peak of movement on a trajectory standard and don't do so well afterwards.
This is like, it looks like they're pulling them in as they're at their high or one of their big highs.
Yep. Maybe they're
some of the world's biggest. What's the stock trading at now?
125.
Okay. So at 130, it becomes a $1 trillion company and the world's biggest corporation in terms of market cap, right?
Yeah. 142.
I thought it was 130.
Well, let's do a quick division. It's 1,000 divided by 7.
Whatever the case. Is it the point where it's the world's biggest corporation in terms of market cap?
Oh, no, you're talking about market cap. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
you're
market cap.
Yeah.
So it's a $1 trillion company.
Yep.
It pretty much, almost, will be there shortly. But then it go into the Dow at this ridiculous high?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Why didn't they bring them in like 5 years ago?
Because the stock was too high. They couldn't do it in the 200, 300s. Stock had the Dow Jones is calculated on a price-weighted average.
Oh, so because they needed, if they had split, let's say, five years ago, this would have been possible?
Probably.
Oh, huh.
And one of the things that's happening now is that Visa is the number one mover, or has been the number one mover of the Dow Jones for some time, stock price 270 or something. They're going to be splitting. When they split, it brings down their overall percentage weighting in terms of movement in the Dow Jones. So you put in this other $100 stock and it brings up technology again. If you consider Visa technology. I'm not sure if it's financial or technology. So they're splitting on the 18th.
Interesting.
And Apple's going in on the 18th, replacing AT&T.
Oh, that's funny. It's ironic.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the most ironic thing I've heard for a while.
So there you go. That's going to be happening on now. So what will happen now is the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ are all going to be essentially as they have, but more so moving together because Apple is going to have a heavy weighting in all of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess
I'm looking at today's chart with the Dow next to the NASDAQ, next to the S&P 500. I don't think they could match any more than they are.
Yeah. They're
just each one of these charts is identical.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what happened today. There was a big sell-off in the market, about 340 points on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. There was also a drop of about 1.7% on the S&P 500. Small caps fared okay, down about 1.4% comparatively. And usually you see small caps really selling off, but they've been somewhat strong lately. And this is coming after a massively good jobs number last week, 5.5% on the unemployment rate.
Yeah.
And 275,000 or so, and then 22.95. And last month's jobless numbers were actually also revised higher.
Good.
So a lot of people are, you know, bitching about, the unemployment rate and the participation rate and all the problems. It's really not 5.5% and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that we've been putting on, you know, well over 200,000 on average new jobs per month for some time now.
That should continue. Yeah, and that will continue to put downward pressure on the market for the one reason I know you're going to discuss.
Which is?
Well, when it looks like if things are improving, they're going to pull back even further on quantitative easing.
Yep.
And that's the big fear the market has, that all this free money is going to go away.
Yep. It's interesting because when joblessness hit its height and when we had this terrible run on, you know, firings, you know, 500,000 per month, the markets liked it. For two reasons.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, they didn't like it initially, but then they started to like it. For two
reasons.
Yeah,
they started to like it because they saw this free money coming in.
Free money coming in and companies saving money because they're doing all these firings.
Yeah.
Now what's happening is that companies are going to be spending more money, especially when productivity is down and wages are being pressured. And on top of it, the free money train is, in the U.S. at least, is stopping. Meanwhile, the dollar has been on a tear more than I think the euro cracked 107 today.
Makes nothing but sense to me.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, how far can you go when you see the dollar moving as rapidly as it's moving for stocks? I mean, it's really not good for our major companies.
I just talked, Curry is over in Holland, and we just talked like a day or two ago. It was like a $1.08. Now it's a $1.07.
Yep.
That's actually a lot of movement for currency.
Tremendous movement. Tremendous movement.
One day and a half. And I think it's going to break the dollar mark. Or break the 1-to-1 mark probably within the next 90 days.
By the end of at the current rate that is going, by the end of the month.
Well, then it's going to collapse. In other words, we're going to see that. I was in Europe 1 year when the dollar was. This is the only time I was just got lucky, I guess. I showed up, and the dollar was 80 cents. It was 80 cents
per euro, or 80. Yeah, I got
80 cents per euro. Right. And it was great. It was the only time, and I have a bunch of anecdotes about it and get pretty boring about how great it was, but it was fantastic. And I think we're headed back down. I don't know if it's going to get down to 80 cents again, but this thing is ripping down. It's falling like a rock.
And this is also with the quantitative easing in Europe started Monday, officially.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the quantitative easing here ran the dollar in the other direction. And as we pull back on quantitative easing and they increase it, there's nothing to stop this from continuing. It's going to go way down to it definitely drops below parity in the next 90 days. And you say in the next 2 weeks.
I'm just saying the way that it's going right now. I mean, I think Monday it was 109 or something.
Well, I think it was like, what was it last week when we did the show? It was like 113 or 111 or something. I mean, this is ridiculously ridiculous how quickly this thing is collapsing. And of course, the Japanese thing now is a $1.21, which is completely ridiculous.
It was let's see here. It was 109 Monday.
The euro. Oh, you're talking about the euro, yeah.
109 on Monday. Two cents down after it's been moving down so much as it is.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the ECB's quantitative easing program, they announced that they'll be buying German and Spanish bonds. I don't know why they're buying German bonds with the rates as low as they are. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe they're safer. Maybe they're trying to go after the safety trade right now. But how much further they're going to push down bonds, I have no idea. It seems to me that their quantitative easing program, it's a lot different. But the size and the magnitude of it compared to the amount of money that's available in the European zone with the bonds that are out there compared to what we did here is a lot bigger.
I didn't know that.
It seems that already all of the talk, all of the rhetoric, all of the pre-announcements and leaks and all that drove down their bonds. That's why their bonds are yielding so much less than ours. Now, I don't know about you, but if I was a country in Europe and I had the ability to issue bonds, what I would do is I would issue bonds to the ECB. Let's call it $1 billion, okay? Issue $1 billion worth of bonds, and let's say I get, a 0.5%. And I'll take that money in, and it's guaranteed to the ECB, right? Everything's, I'm going to pay that off, and I'll take the money in, and I'll buy the bonds of the U.S., which are safe, at 2%. Get a 1% spread on your money.
Yeah, arbitrage.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, guaranteed. And gee, I wonder if anyone does that.
Yeah, and that's another reason why you're seeing the dollar move up so much. That's why, you know, money's flooding into this country. It's leaving there. They're dropping the dollar, the euro down by basically throwing more into the markets. Then they're taking money out by possibly sending it elsewhere to get yield on it, you know, the sovereigns. And that's a double whammy to the dollar. This whole thing is such a mess.
And oil's down to below 50 again, yep. Which is a good thing, too.
Yeah, and gold.
It depends on who you're looking at. This is all a good thing and a bad thing.
Right.
This is all good for certain groups and bad for other groups. It's always been that way. But this is, I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Yeah, of course. But eventually, it's like with anything else, you know, this whole major, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a drug rampage. But when it's over, it's bad.
Oh, yeah.
The crash is
hard. Not going to end well.
Yeah.
But at least during this period.
Yeah, but it's fun.
We're like, and I listen to other podcasts and other stock market analysts and all the rest. And I would say that very few of them are on the bandwagon that we're on in terms of analyzing this correctly. There, you know, I'm still a couple of years. Oh, we're going to have hyperinflation. Oh, this is bad and that's bad. Oh, we can't do this. We can't do that. When in fact, it seems to me that everything is going quite well.
Yeah. And that's because we are in so much of a so much worse shape than anybody realized.
Yeah.
It's like and I describe it as this: there was like a giant crater created by a meteor, and all this quantitative easing has been just filling that crater.
Yeah,
and that's why you don't have any inflation. I mean, it just the money just disappears. Versus flooding into the markets as it traditionally will. Not to mention the fact that in this day and age, the money that flows in is being used in the stock market rather than by people to spend.
And right, but the money that the public does have because of lower gas prices and other things, they do spend. And that's a lot of money. And gold is down too, which makes it even weirder.
Yep, gold is down at, 1,600? I mean,
1,160.
1,160, sorry, that's what I meant with the six. Yeah, 1,160. Yeah. Goldman this week came out with a call over the weekend that, we see oil at 40.
Well, we said that on our show.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Oil is perplexing. The whole thing is very perplexing because the fact is that we see these numbers come out on a weekly basis. We see the numbers that we look at in inventories. But the truth of the matter is there is so much behind the scenes that goes on. It gets put into a ship, maybe an inventory, and doesn't end up somewhere. It's inventory because people think that eventually it's going to be higher. So they're putting all this, you know, pumping as much as they can and putting it into storage. The whole thing is a big sham. It is.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to argue the point.
And I still don't understand why the government doesn't do something about this. You know, all these oil companies are hurting terribly. They're laying off people. It's really a problem. Meanwhile, if oil went to 150, the government would be all over it. Oh, my God. You know, we got to release the strategic reserves. We got to do something about these oil prices. You know, it would be big news, big political headlines, you know, people trying to get in the spotlight to reduce it down. But meanwhile, when it goes down, nothing's said. It's like don't say a word about that. It's good.
Well, the question I still would like to ask if I had the opportunity to do it at a press conference somewhere is that because the price is dropping like this, are we replenishing the strategic reserves during this moment?
I'm sure we are.
Well, I'd hope so.
We really didn't release that much. We're going to, you know, we'll take all that and put it into the strategic reserves so that if it goes up again, we'll try to bring it down because it's all about politics. It's all about the vote. But if it's all about the vote, on the other hand, why don't we care about all these people that are losing their jobs? Is because they're Republicans in Texas?
Well, the guys, I don't know. I think we just don't pay attention to the shale guys. They're not a beloved segment of the economy.
Yeah.
The shale guys.
Yeah, the shalers. Just to get back to the S&P 500 for a second. So we broke the 50-day moving average on the S&P today. Next major support is the 200-day moving average, about 2001, which is about, 45, so 2%. No big deal, but 2% down from here. Test the 200-day moving average. And I put a chart on there if you want to look at it. Not that important, but that's where the next support line is on this. And we'll see if we do test this. If the dollar continues to move higher, I would be hard-pressed to understand how, in fact, with the earnings that we've seen, with the expectations for earnings, and now as it gets higher, even worse, and oil moving down, and that's a problem for the energy sector. And the big question of Apple having so much of the revenue growth last year, and the big question is, how are they going to match that without this massive amount of iPhone 6 buys that went on? I mean, there was a ridiculous amount of iPhone 6s compared to all the others sold, right?
Yeah, outrageous. And I don't even think it's their best model. I still think the 5, when it came out, was probably the peak of their design. I think that that was a beautiful piece of gear. The iPhone 6 is kind of clunky.
Well, the question is, I think the people were waiting for a major change. I was.
And, well, the bigger screen is a big deal to a lot of people. Yeah.
So the big question is, what's going to happen next? I mean, the watch is not going to make up for the sales.
No. No, that watch.
So the, wait
the
6 months.
Plastic band, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not plastic. It's a, he used some other word of what it was made from.
What's it made from?
Let's take a look.
It's not plastic?
No, I don't think so. Apple Watch band.
I know the sport editions, it's got to be plastic. It's green.
Let's see. Apple Watch costs between the bands will cost between $49 and $499.
$499 for a band?
Yeah. Let's see. 38 millimeter sports band. Yeah, it's different sizes. Let's see what it says it is. That's not telling me what I want. What is it? What is it made from? Apple Watch band
material. Look at that. Apple Watch band material. I'll look it up too.
Okay, let's see here. I call them straps. Band material. Why does it say band materials? Consider which the band. Important band revealed episodes, but the materials are finished by a collection of bands offered to the Apple Watch.
Craftsmanship.
Let's see. Here's something. Something on TechCrunch. The Apple Watch monthly offerings is how. Okay.
I think about kinds of different case and band combinations.
It's a sapphire crystal.
Nobody talks about the material.
Scratch resistant, aesthetics, rubberized strap. Rubberized.
Rubberized.
What does rubberized mean?
A.K.A. plastic.
Leather? They have leather?
Yeah, they do have leather. Well, leather, one of the two.
Maps, unlike your doors. Features, battery life, 18 hours.
It's a metal one, too, I guess.
Rubberized plastic sports band. Rubberized plastic.
Whatever.
We'll start seeing them around soon enough.
Oh, they'll be around as soon as they start selling. Well, then we'll see what the sales curve looks like and whether or not these things are going to be any good.
Yep. A couple things to China. China's slowing down. Exports, though, that was released over the weekend surged about 50%. Imports dropped dramatically. But this is due to the low, you know, they've been dropping their currency and the dollar's been rising as well. So there was supposedly, if we can believe the numbers, a surge in exports. They also had an increase in inflation. Now, on the other hand, in Macau, which is the island that has the gaming, right? It was one of the biggest, you know, big gaming, and you know, it's going to rivals more than rivals.
Ex Portuguese colony.
Yeah, big. Gaming revenue fell 50% year over year.
Mm.
Now, one of the bad things here is that all the crackdowns on smoking, can't smoke in many of the casinos anymore.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, actually, let me rephrase that. It's going to be that you can't smoke in many of the casinos.
Oh, that makes no sense.
Yeah, the Chinese are big on smoking. And
oh, they should just make better ventilators and let people smoke. I don't see that. I don't know.
And then the other thing is that this big crackdown on many of the government officials spending all sorts of money on boondoggles.
Oh.
They actually had at one of their meetings a box, a red box. This is true. And in that red box... Well, it was a hotel, okay? And there's a big meeting of all these, you know, political figures and all that. And they had this big meeting, and there was this red box. The red box was if you saw somebody doing something, or if you knew about someone who was maybe buying cigarettes for themselves and all their friends on the, you know, on the government's dime, or all this really expensive whiskey and scotch, and you know, taking all sorts of trips and private airlines. If you knew it anonymously, put that information in the red box. I'm serious.
So that's great.
So they're looking for ways to crack down on this, and now you got your friends on your ass. So not good there.
This is not the way to do things.
Speaking of not the way to do things, Greece. Now, Greece is trying to come up with very creative ways to make some money, right? Because they need money. They're running out of money, and they're not seemingly doing what they need to do to give to the ECB and the Troika in order to get their bailouts.
You know, you're the master of the segue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I noticed that when we were doing advertising in the past.
Yeah, I've written on a few of those. They're really nice. They're easy once you get the thing going.
Yeah, you can't go backwards, though.
No. So Greece comes up with this crazy way to try to raise revenue. What they're going to do is they're going to use...
Yeah, I heard this. This is hilarious.
They're going to use tourists to spy on businesses that don't pay tax or take in tax. And they'll get paid, I guess, some kind of a, you know, finder's fee. So why would it... stupid. Actually,
so you see, you go into a place and the restaurant guy, you can tell he's like running a money laundering kind of operation. You know, it's not money laundering, but he's, you know, he's taking your bill and he's putting the money in the register, but he's not really putting it in the tickets.
Yeah.
So he's just taking the money that he charged you for the food, and he's not going to pay any taxes on this money, kind of thing. And you're supposed to turn him in because you can spot this a mile away because you're a cop. I don't know. How do you even know this?
I don't know. But, you know, maybe if somebody says, hey, you know what? Pay me cash and I won't take any tax on it. So they want tourists to do this. Now, they presented this in part of their plan to the ECB and the Troika, who said, are you kidding? This is your plan?
This is your great plan.
This is the plan where you want to get $30 billion from us. You're going to have tourists spying on business, maybe you should rethink this. Now, that wasn't the only thing they put together, but that was one of the...
No, but I think the Greeks could have come back with, you have no idea.
Yeah. This could be a major moneymaker. This could be big, very big. Okay, let's see what else here. Hillary Clinton. What is the story and what is all the hubbub about these emails?
What about them?
She had these emails potentially, maybe, possibly, who knows, that... were her private emails on her home server, that there's concern about two things. I guess one is the security of it, and two, if she talked about Benghazi on those. Is that what this is all about?
I think it's about Benghazi more than anything else.
So somehow Hillary Clinton has these emails that she sent somewhere else, and they're concerned that they're on her server, but yet when you send them, they go on somebody else's server. So the emails are findable?
Not necessarily.
Why is that?
Well, for example, if she's doing email with some clandestine operations.
Oh, I don't think that's what we're talking about, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What clandestine operations?
Well, I don't know.
You're talking about domestically or foreign?
Both.
Are you saying something that could be labeling her a traitor or just something that should be high-level secret?
Probably the latter.
Okay.
And, I mean, that's the first suspicion that comes to mind. And apparently Bill was also using this thing when he was president, I guess. I'm not sure about that part, but there's a rumor going around. And, yeah, she's doing all this communicating outside the loops, outside the purview, outside the transparency. Just doing whatever she's doing. Who knows what it is? She could be soliciting money for all we know. We have no idea.
We have no idea. So they're going to somehow get this email server.
They're not getting this email. This email has either been erased, which is one of the great things about running your own email server.
Yeah, of course.
You can erase the email. Right.
Well, you can erase it on your backup. But you can erase it on your side, obviously.
Yeah, you can erase it. Yeah, sure. The other people will still have it, but in if it was dealing with clandestine types, mm-hmm. let's say, they'd erase it anyway. I mean, they might keep it as blackmail or whatever nefarious purpose. But generally speaking, let's assume the other side just erased it. Or they didn't know the value of it, or they don't just like let it slide. I mean, I probably have all kinds of cool email backed up on my email server that I don't even know it's there.
Well, this is going to be a major issue because here's the thing. So you make this up. Now, we're talking politics for a second. You make this up, and it may or may not be true, right? We don't know, but it may or not be true. And if there is even suspicion that there is, and if, in fact, the public becomes aware of this in a way that the idea is put in their head that there could have been emails on there that were in some way compromising, the fact is, and that you could never find them, you can't get that out of your head any longer. Because yeah, now, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a negative impulse, or impulse isn't the right word, but it's a negative engram that has been, you know, pushed toward everyone. I mean, I would say I promote it. But what did she have this email for in the first place? Is the government email no good?
Yeah, no.
She's hired a Secretary of State. She's going to use Google or Gmail or AOL or who knows what, or her own server, you know, with a GoDaddy domain name. I mean, what's the point? It doesn't make sense.
Maybe she had an old AOL email that she didn't want to give up.
Yeah. I don't know anyone that would ever say that. Although I do know a couple of people that use old AOL emails.
As soon as somebody tells you, listen, what is the image you get when somebody says, you say, hey, Bob, what's your email? And he tells you, bobr6725@aol.com.
Yeah, Rube.
What is it?
Rube. Or idiot. Oh, it's not worse. It's CompuServe where you use some code number.
Right. Oh, remember that?
Yeah.
105.722?
Yeah, something like that.
CompuServe.com or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, so
now, if you really want to confuse somebody, just go say, "Oh, you know, I haven't used my email a lot. I'll go on MCI mail later today and see what it was. I forget what it was." Mail.
That's good. Yep, exactly. All right, so let's see here. Okay, so gold we mentioned at 1160. We mentioned ECB. We worst the markets. Okay, good. All this is good. All right, now let's talk about this idea that. What's going to happen next with the markets? Now, if we are going to, once again, simply go down a few points on the markets and then turn around, this is one of those days that you would see that, well, you would call a market in correction concept because of today, because of all the distribution and the volume and everything that went on. Today would be one of those days you'd say, okay, you know, markets are in corrective mode here. Now, every time that's happened so far, we've seen maybe a follow through the following day because what happens is that on the open, forget about the futures, on the open, oftentimes there was a lot of orders that were pending for, okay, sell on open, right? So we ended on the lows today. And what happens is you get an imbalance of orders that go in, and maybe some of them will close out, maybe some of them will be carried forward. People go home, they look at the numbers, oh, God, I got to sell tomorrow. So they call the brokers early in the morning, do me a favor, sell me at open. So you get all these big orders that will pop the market down on the open. Now, oftentimes what happens then is it comes down. If we see a turn, it goes lower and then comes back up, which is actually what you want to see if you're bullish. You see it comes down, maybe comes down hard, and then starts reversing higher. And you actually close above the open and even better, you know, a little bit higher than that. Then you got a reversal day. And every time we've seen that exact scenario, we just back up to the highs in a few days in the recent trading.
Is that what you're expecting? We're definitely, I'm not hopeful that we have our 10% correction, which would drop the market to 16.2 or so. It just doesn't seem to want to do that. Because everyone keeps talking about, oh, 10% correction, 10% correction. You know, this can't go on forever. And the 10% correction would normalize thing, I think. But I'm thinking what you're saying is that's not going to happen. What we're going to see is the same pattern where it drops like, oh, maybe bad's going to happen. Then it reverses and goes right back to 18,000, whatever.
Well, if you look at the actual fundamentals of the market, it would seem to me that we are overpriced at this point. It would seem that way. Now, there's a lot of things that go into that, like what's the interest rates? We have easy money. You know, we still have bond buying going on. But economics are soft, generally speaking, except for employment. Or at least softer than you'd want to see. CPI is coming down. That's kind of good for the whole QE/stimulus, you know, no inflation. We're going to see PPI at the end of this week too. Retail sales we'll see tomorrow. Thursday we'll see retail sales tomorrow. Expectations are for plus 0.3 versus a negative 0.8% month over month from last month. And one of the things you do want to see is that with all this extra people working, that we're seeing some money flow into the economy through retail sales. But still, a plus 0.3 is not impressive, especially if last month was down almost 1%. We're not getting anywhere. But now, the thing is that on top of this, earnings estimates are looking for about a 5% reduction in earnings, even with all of the share repurchases that we're seeing. That being the case, you should be able to reprice the market based on that. And we should probably be, you know, a bunch lower at this point.
Hmm.
But with all of the share repurchases going on by companies.
Well, and also that money flowing in from overseas because of the dollar strength.
And if you're a company and you have a $1 billion buyback program, you're pretty much going to spend money anytime you see a dip in your stock. And there's no fundamentals. You have no fundamentals because you have an edict to buy. It's not like you have a choice of what stock to buy either. You're going to buy your stock. You got $1 billion, you got to buy this one stock. You have 2 years that you can do this. Let's keep the stock up. Okay, we drop down 4%, we're buying. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, there's no, it's not like you're looking technical, you're not looking at fundamentals. It's just
nobody cares.
Nobody cares, just spend the money. And then on top of that, it's kind of like inflation in terms of stocks. Right? Stocks are inflating because you have all this money to spend, and you know, people are trying to just get in and to spend the money, which would normally happen in an economy with excess money and excess liquidity. But it's all going to the stocks right now. And then on top of that, we do have some of the numbers coming out for banks this week. We had 31, I think, of the 31 banks pass the stress test last week. Now you get to see, I think, Citi and a couple others looking at their plans and whether or not they could do buybacks, whether or not they could do dividends and share distributions. I think that's tomorrow. I believe it's tomorrow. So we'll see what's happening with the banking sector. With that, but you know, still at the end of the day, we're going to be watching for this another V. One of these V's is going to end up being a false V, and it's going to turn into kind of a let's see what that would be. V. That would be an upside down N, I guess. You know, and then just going to go down because there's going to be all of a sudden this move back. You know, the last guy's like, oh my god, last time I didn't get in on the bounce. I didn't get in the last two times on the drop. I'm doing it this time. And once you get those guys flushed in, that's when the problem happens.
Right. They're the guys that are the markers.
Yep. The weak hands. And they'll be like, okay, you know what? I'm getting in. And then all of a sudden drops. And like, oh my God, I'm out. And they start a further downstroke. So we'll see. I mean, it does seem to me there's a lot of bullishness out there. And on the other hand, let me just throw one other thing out at you. According to our readings, that the markets in terms of oversold, overbought areas, right now, we are at a negative 4 in our parlance of what we talk about here. The worst I've seen is about a negative 6. Negative 4 is bad. Negative 5 is really where, like, okay, start buying because you're so oversold. And it's interesting how quickly we become oversold. Right? It's only a couple of weeks things aren't looking so good. And so right now, we're at a negative 4. I'd like to see a few more days, maybe not of major downside, but at least some you know, slowdown of just the turnaround, and keep that number pretty oversold for a while, and then you'll see I think a nice little pop on the upside. Whether it's going to be follow through all the way or not is another story entirely, but we're getting to an oversold level.
Mm.
And finally,
well, it doesn't sound like a good time to be a short seller.
I don't think it's the worst time either, depending on the stocks. But listen, we already saw a major earnings crunch on energy. They're a big component of the S&P 500 and the Dow and all that. And if you see those earnings continue to slip, there's a big question as to, you know, how's the rest of the market going to stay up?
Apple.
Well, of course, it is obviously. Now, Alibaba, BABA, their lockup is expiring March 18th. 437 million shares are going to become available. 437 million shares.
Hmm.
It's a lot of shares. Stock is trading towards near an all-time low. So we're going to see what happens with this lockup expiration. Let's see. Now, I do want to mention to you that I think we mentioned this before, but a couple of our podcasts have been nominated for awards.
Yes, we have to do something about this.
Yes, the No Agenda Show is for the People's Choice Award, as well as
politics.
I think, was it you or I talked to Curry. He said he can't believe it wasn't in the comedy.
Oh, he's always promoting the idea it's a comedy show. And just because something's funny doesn't mean it's a comedy show.
Right, right. So it's in those two, you can go over to Podcast Awards.
By the way, I told him that I think we should be under Best Produced. It's a very well produced show.
How do you have you listened to the other ones that are best produced? What is it? What does it take to be best produced?
They do a lot of post production.
To do what?
Well, you know, they do. It's just they're overproduced in a way that I think that makes them.
Is it sound effects? Is it
no? It's just like. Go listen to them. You'll see what I'm talking about. There's a certain type of sound that they have that is over. It's that PBS overproduced sound. Mm. You know, if you listen to any of the PBS broadcasts that become podcasts, which aren't really podcasts in my opinion, this is this repurposed radio show. But mm-hmm. Okay, and it's you know, tight, and they have the sound is great. It's fantastic, and there's no mistakes made anywhere in the show, and it's post-produced to an extreme.
I know this sounds crazy, but I think ours sounds pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, we sound great. But we're live to tape.
Right.
Except that we're not 100% live to tape, which I think is the way to do things because it's more spontaneous. It has a nicer charm. We're not 100% live to tape because at the beginning and end, we tack on a musical introduction and an outro.
Yeah, but that's the only thing we do.
But you could do that literally when we started the show. You could put that up and then play it, and then we'd go right into the show, and then at the end of the show we could play the outro without doing it after the show, and then it would be 100% live to tape, which is how we do the No Agenda show, except for the one little tidbit that we drop at the very beginning of the show, which is a clip from the show itself.
I don't see the big difference, but okay.
There's a big difference with people that post up the whole show. They don't. It's just the whole show is cut together. It's all pieced together.
No, but I'm saying the difference between what we do and live to tape is not much of a difference.
No, the difference is minor. That's true.
Right. But the No Agenda show is available at podcastawards.com. You go over there and you click on the No Agenda show in the People's Choice and in politics, and the Disciplined Investor show in business finance. And then you go to the bottom and you put in your name and you put in your email and you say click. And then you get an email. Don't forget this part. You get an email confirmation that you're not a bot. And you click that, and that's important because if you don't do this, it doesn't work. You click it
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. You haven't voted for yourself then.
No, I haven't voted for myself.
Yeah, you should probably go do that. And then what happens is you get a confirmation.
Although a very well-programmed bot could deal with this.
Probably. So make sure to go over to please. It's very important because we could win plastic trophies. And I think there's a $15 gift certificate to Denny's available.
Or Shake Shack.
Yeah, Shake Shack. Yeah, well, earnings tomorrow on Shake Shack.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. They bid the stock up 4.5% today, and we'll see if the company
it's a hamburger stand.
64 stores can – I mean, the first time around, they may be able to do well on this. We're short in the game, and we're short with the clients on this. I'm a little nervous going into the earnings, as I always am whenever you have a
hamburger place.
Yes, I understand. I'm with you. But McDonald's sales are awful, by the way. I think their month over month was down another 1.7%.
Yeah, it's a lot for them.
Yeah, terrible. All right, let's take a look at the stock, sir. I'm always interested in hearing what you have dug up. This is a game that we play. You can find out all the information on dhunplugged.com. We have links and a live spreadsheet with all the different stocks that we're either short, long, or what's going on with them. We have a 10% stop requirement unless we say otherwise in all these. In other words, if the stock goes down 10% from the high or from where we bought it at any given point, there's a trailing stop on there for 10%. We'll note that and pull it out. Also, this is not an offer to buy or sell any security, and this is the game we play. Please use proper financial advice if you're thinking about doing anything with this. We don't recommend this at all. Of course, if Horowitz Company, John C. Dvorak, or myself own any of these stocks, we will note that in the disclosures.
Now, I want to point out that from June of last year through our picks to January of this year, every single stock is up.
And up big. Most of them.
Well, except the one. My IBM short.
It's starting to move in the right direction, though. It broke 160.
It's up 2%.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. It should be down at 120.
We'll just keep an eye on it.
Yep.
It's dead money. Dead money.
But things are going well for the rest of those. Monster Beverage up 37%. Doug is up again. Sinjevinevia is up. Is down about to 5.9. The big winner, ding ding, Intrexon.
Yeah.
Up 48%.
Yeah, I just picked that on January 28th, and it's now almost up 50%. Yep. That was a good one.
Yep. Shake Shack down 2% with earnings coming out. That's because today it was up 5%. Twitter, flat. TBT,
flat. Yeah, more
flat.
Dead money.
Yep.
Yep.
Another one we picked, let's see, what is this? About two.
You got your Global X fund short, and you're up 17%. That's a recent pick.
That was Greece.
2 days ago.
I looked at it today. I'm like, really? 17%? I didn't realize it was down that much. But don't forget, a lot of the things with that is that you also have the benefit of the euro going down. So
that was a great call. I like that Global X Funds short. That's a beauty.
Now, what else is up on this list? Just hold on. Just for one moment, take a look at this list for a second and see what else is up here that usually is not.
Well, let's see. You don't have Panera on here.
No.
What's up that's usually not? I don't know. What?
Apple when we shorted.
Oh, you shorted Apple. Yeah. Oh, that's right. You shorted Apple at 129.
Yep.
Ahead of the iWatch announcement. You're actually in the green. That's unusual. I've tried to short Apple a couple of times, and it's always been a fail.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. It's fantastic.
Yep. So
I don't think it's the beginning of the end by any means, and I would guess that this is going to lose out this bit.
Well, the good news is that I can't lose the full 10% at this point. I can only lose like 6.5.
Yeah, because you're up. Yeah, it's true.
So I have a pick which is going against one of my other picks.
I like this pick.
And I think we talked about it last week briefly.
Yeah.
I'm glad we waited.
I was thinking about it myself. I'm thinking about actually doing it in real life.
Oh, really? Okay. National Bank of Greece. They were actually up today, and they were up after hours as well. It's a low price stock, and it's not a low price stock for any other reason but other than the fact that it's lost so much money because it's the National Bank of Greece. It's like Bank America on steroids to the downside in the bad times. Yeah. So what would happen here? So the stock is about 130. It's been holding around here, and this is with all the money fleeing out of all the banks in Greece, of course, and with the fact that they can't make any decisions, with now, the Troika coming in with Mario Draghi begging Greece to open up their books and please let us help you, and with Greece obviously fighting everything. The problem is that Greece is fighting a losing battle in a way because they're going to run out of money within a few weeks. So they need to capitalize, and I don't think the spying is going to help them on that, to get all the money they need. So at the same time, with all that bad news, et cetera, countries have a general desire not to allow their financial system to go into the toilet. And
I think this logic is absolutely on the money.
Now, what may happen, which may work against us here, is if somehow, the bank is nationalized. That may not be good.
Well, you might get the dollar out of it. I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, it may not be a terrific situation here. Or if Greece
could
just
be.
gives the ECB the big, gyro finger and says, thank you very much, but eat this. And that would probably not be good for them either. But I am betting because I am so twisted.
I think it's a great bet.
Twisted by what's gone on the last number of years that they won't let this thing go down.
Yeah. I am on board with this idea.
Okay, good. Now, what do you have?
I have one insider thing that is just kind of eating at me.
Oh.
I'll tell you why by looking at this guy's activity. Felix Baker of the Baker Brothers out of Seattle, these rich guys.
Yeah.
Is just buying like crazy. And I see he started in December and he's been buying and buying and buying. Let's see, but I'm doing this dramatically by not saying what. 22 million, 4 million, 13, 15 million, 60 million, 30 million, 94 million, 2 million, 7 million, 800,000. I don't get that. 14 million just the other day of Seattle Genetics.
S-G-E-N, right?
And he's been also buying into, he's apparently a board member or something because he's been exercising his options for Syngeva, Biopharma.
This is up 6% today.
Yeah.
What's the story with this here?
Late to the party. And he's also been buying into Acadia, which I think we've...
Acadia moved up. Is that the one that moved up crazy today? ACAD?
Could be. There's something up, is the way I see it. And especially after that recent buyout of that biochemical.
Yeah, it's up 18% today.
For $21 billion that they got one drug that costs $100,000 a year to use. And now that these guys are getting a clue about you got any sort of drug that you've got the patents for and you own this drug and it's a lifesaver, you can gouge the poor dying customer to an outrageous extreme to make your numbers look good. You could just be a cold-blooded a-hole. It just looks like the pharmaceutical companies have all become.
Yep.
I don't care about antibiotics or anything like that. They're looking for the big score. And I believe Seattle Genetics is a candidate for something, either a buyout or a merger. This guy's not buying. How much did he buy? He's bought over $100 million worth, almost $200 million worth of stock.
You know why Acadia surged 17% today?
Why?
Because they canceled an event.
They canceled
their attendance at an event.
That's interesting. And what caused it to go up over that circumstance?
When a company cancels, let's see, if the company canceled two investor meetings, they canceled investor meetings. And the reason for that, the speculation is if you're canceling a meeting, is there's a deal in the works.
Oh.
That's always the case. If you drop out of a conference, like if Goldman has a healthcare conference.
Right, you go into silent mode.
Yeah.
Silent running or whatever. They have a name for it. I can't remember. Yeah, quiet mode or something.
Yes. Quiet period.
Yeah, so you have to shut up. You can't have your meeting.
Right. They also canceled the Roth appearance. They're supposed to be at Roth at the last minute.
Oh, so something's up.
Yep.
Well, it could be with these guys, Seattle Genetics.
Yeah, let's take a look at that, what's going on there. Let's see what it says here. They're going to be an event. Wow. What number is that? 1.15, what is that? 156 million?
I don't know. I'm not looking
at it. 15 million. March 9th. Insider buying. Seattle Genetics Director acquires 156, 300. No, $15 million. Yeah. Felix Baker. Yep. That's about all I see on the news here. Price target 44, up 6.5. Wow. And let's see. Year to date, this is up. Only 15%. That's not that.
Yeah, that makes it a really good looking deal.
Yeah. Annual shareholder meeting's coming up. Nothing. March 11th. March 11th, tomorrow, they'll be at the Seattle Genetics at a Barclays Healthcare Conference, 8:30 in the morning. So there you go. And they treat lymphoma, development and commercialization of all this stuff, cancer drugs. Okay, good. All right, we got it on there.
Okay. I think this is going to be another pharmacyclics.
Yep. Insider buying. All right. Well, I will we'll end it here, and I will see you next week.
All right. Sounds great.
All right. Don't forget to vote.
To vote and vote often.
Yeah, a lot. You can do it every day, once per day, by the way. Podcastawards.com. Thanks so much. See ya.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.